Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. You know, Carl, failures happen.
They even, do.
Even just setting up for this recording session today, we had it as a failure mechanism rear its head.
That's right. That's right. That could be a bumper sticker, failures happen.
There's one like that. It's a little more succinct.
I know. Yeah, I've been wanting to explore a little deeper this subject of the mechanisms of failure. We often do pretty well on understanding what a root cause is from a design standpoint, but we don't do as well on understanding the mechanisms of failure. And sometimes people don't even understand the difference. Like in FMEA world, there's a cause column. And in some forms, some procedures, it's cause slash failure mechanism. Mm-hmm. And in a few companies, there's a cause column and a failure mechanism column. And there's a difference between those two. And it's a really important difference. But I just wanted to explore a little bit with you and get some of your views on it, too, because I know in our past conversations, you're a likewise champion of the whole concept of understanding failure mechanisms.
Yeah, and we probably should define these a little bit, because the part I run into it when doing FMEAs with teams is the difference between a failure mode and a failure mechanism. And then causes kind of is another term that's in this mix part of it. But a mechanism to me is, I describe it as the physics or the chemistry, which is at the base fundamental root of something that's not doing what it's supposed to do, or it's changing it. So it could be material properties have changed, and that covers a huge swath of different things that can happen. For example, it's down to the material science level.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And things can change, and they can be good results or bad results. It's the results of something that breaks or embrittles or degrades or rusts or whatever is the symptom. It's what the customer sees. And that's mm-hmm. the failure mode to me.
Right.
Okay.
Right. No, very, very good. Very well described. Let me put it in my own words, and then because I think that's part of the discussion is getting the concept in your own words. To me, the mode, and it's very similar to what you say, it's the manner in which whatever item you're analyzing doesn't accomplish its function. And so it's like you say, it's like what presents itself.
Mm-hmm.
The cause is, now I'm speaking FMEA language, but the cause is the specific reason for the failure expressed as a deficiency in design, a design deficiency, or if you're looking at a manufacturing process, the manufacturing deficiency. Separate from that, the failure mechanism is the actual physical phenomenon behind the failure mode, such as the thermodynamic or the chemistry or physical processes that underlie the failure itself. And to me, this is the essence of design for reliability.
No, wait a second. Now, and the cause is, that almost sounded like who are we going to blame?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not, I don't think that's what you mean. So let's say we have an electrical connection and the design has it, it's a socket basically, and we insert it and if that doesn't work, the motor doesn't turn, so the window doesn't go up. So the window doesn't go up. We find the cause is that this connector is bad. It's come apart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Would that be a cause that it's a bad connector or it's a bad design for the connector? It's the inappropriate connector for that application. And the underlying mechanism might be that it didn't have enough normal force to hold the pins together. So it's, they separated. So the normal force was insufficient for the application.
Yeah. So if we're talking if the team, the root cause team or the FMEA team has come down to the problem with this window going up or whatever, is the connector itself. And I always ask why. So mm-hmm. what is it about the connector? And it might be, like you say, the little prongs. And maybe the prongs because I'm looking for design deficiencies when I'm looking at cause. And we're not looking to blame. We're not blaming people. But there's something about the design that is deficient from what it's supposed to do. And so there might be, maybe the material composition is wrong. So one of the causes might relate to the material composition. Mm-hmm. It might be some alloy that just isn't strong enough. Or there might be a dimensional characteristic, mm-hmm, such mm-hmm. as the cross section or the thickness of the prongs, and so that could be what's bringing it about, and that's the reason for the failure. Now the mechanism. So what is it that's creating the bending? So you might get down to the specific mechanism related to the metal structure that is allowing that yielding. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so yielding is a bending, and yielding is a failure mechanism. And so what is it that's allowing the yielding, or describing the yielding, is describing the mechanism of failure. Right. So I think we can include both in the same sentence or the same discussion, but they're a couple different concepts.
Yeah, it starts getting intermixed real quick, is that... And the mistake I see so many people do is when they start looking at what went wrong, they send the connector back to the vendor and say, all right, you got a bad connector, send us a new one. And they troubleshoot it to the component, but not deeper. And mm-hmm. because the way you just described that, one of the solutions is it's a design issue. It's just the wrong connector for that application. Or, mm-hmm. It was a connector that was out of tolerance, that was on the small side for that diameter, or the spring was deficient, or the molding was incomplete. You still need to dive in deeper to sort out that, well, what is the appropriate corrective action? Is it a new connector, or tighten up process control in the manufacturing of the connector itself, or in our own manufacturing? Did we insert it completely? You know, it could be any of those various things that are the underlying chain of events that led to the failure.
Yeah, exactly. And you can really look at this in two ways, and they could be both, of course. But the mechanism can be the physical phenomenon. So now we're talking fatigue, corrosion, yield, embrittlement, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then you can also talk about the chain of events, the process of degradation or chain of events leading to resulting in the failure mode. And so both of those are candidates for consideration.
Well, there's so much you can learn, though, in doing it getting into the failure mechanism and understanding it. Because if we really understand the failure mechanism, we can see what are the stresses that initiate this chain of events that occur. And if it's in the normal use, or in our shipping and assembly shipping and getting it to a customer in their normal use, that we pretty much need to change the design, because we're probably mm-hmm. not going to change the environment and the way our products are used. Whereas if it's a variability issue that some of our connectors work and some don't, then it's a whole different realm of improvements. It may well still be a design issue. Yet, if you don't have that basic knowledge of which direction to go, it's really hard to go about understanding where you can apply corrective action.
Well, yeah. And the other thing for people to realize is that there are oftentimes there's more than one cause and slash failure mechanism. In other words, there could be a material issue, and then you can describe what's deficient about the material. And then, of course, you can describe the corresponding mechanism, which might relate to corrosion or something. Then you can also, there might be another cause that relates to the geometry. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the part has it too thin of a wall. And then that's going to allow yielding it on the loads that we have. And so some people think there's only one root cause, or the word root can be misleading. Mm-hmm. You can have multiple causes, and some of them are more prevalent and happen more often than others. But there are times when there's not just one overall cause.
It's very true. That's where a fault tree, or just the thought process of what are all the various ways it could fail, the different paths that get there to create this failure mode in general, is mm-hmm. at the top level. I pick on connectors a lot. Power supplies is another favorite of mine because there are so many ways they can fail. Now, some failure mechanisms are just horribly difficult to find. And they kind of get blamed when you run out of other things that you can point to conclusively to do it. Electrostatic discharge is one of my favorite failure mm-hmm. mechanisms. It was actually Dick Moss, when I overlapped with him at HP for a little while, and I had a part fail, and one of the divisions sent it off to the vendor, and the vendor wrote back immediately, "Oh, it's electrostatic discharge, not our fault, man." And they didn't even receive the part yet. They hadn't even got it in their shop yet. Yep. And you know, it was completely melted. It had an internal short. And I says, well, that was one lightning strike of ESD that melted that part. You know, it's like, how do you know it's ESD? Well, it always is. And Dick Moss called it one of the five standard answers you get from a vendor. That's a topic for a whole nother podcast, the five standard answers and what to do with them.
Yes, for sure.
But ESD is like a 1,000-volt discharge in the wrong place that can blast through silicon and create a path where you didn't want it before. And they're very hard to find. And so oftentimes it's you rule out everything else. And I'm sure there's other mechanisms like that, you know, here's our hunch. We've ruled out all the other likely candidates, so it must be this. It's not as strong an argument as others, but sometimes that's all we get.
No, there's a healthy curiosity is a really important value for a reliability engineer. So I like to just keep asking why. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so you have the connector doesn't work. Well, why? So, well, it doesn't work because the prong's bent. Why do the prongs bend? Mm-hmm. Just keep asking why and dig deeper. Now, I know it's not a panacea solution, because oftentimes the why will be inside the supplier, their intellectual property or something. And mm-hmm. so you have to follow a path to get to the why sometimes that is not something you can do just in a conversation or in one meeting. But keep asking why, keep being curious about why. Gets you to those underlying root causes and failure mechanisms.
Now, one of the pushbacks I've gotten on, you know, being curious and diving into these failure mechanisms, and it relates somewhat to our last episode on working or talking with management, is, well, everything's not a research project. Did you understand it enough to move on? And right, it's sometimes we don't know if it's creep or corrosion or thermal cycling, or we don't know the underlying what's really happening. But if we go to a new connector, it works, and we're back on schedule.
Yeah, that's a great point. You have to be practical and understand the time frame you're working in, the budget you're working in, and if you can get to a solution, we want to get to an actionable cause. Actionable mechanism.
And that's where it becomes, it's a trade-off. In some designs, and I'm sure you've run into this, Carl, is where the industrial design really boxes in the potential solutions. Mm-hmm. And you really do need to understand, is it a variability thing, or is it just the wrong material for that application? And there's costs associated with either path, but you need to understand it well enough to pursue and correct the right one. And there's a strong need to get it right. Where if it's, you know, this is not a big problem. It doesn't happen all that often. It doesn't cause a catastrophic or a high severity type issue. Let's prioritize work on something else. Move on.
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, this happens. You've got a new project. It happens a lot. Is portions, certain components and or subassemblies are carryover. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing an analysis and you go, well, the problem is a deficiency in that carryover, but there's no opportunity to fix that carryover mm-hmm. part. There's no budget for it. So there are challenges that reliability engineers run into that are not no-brainers. They have to be a team player. And yet there's no decision that can't be revisited. So if there's a deficiency in a carryover product, then if you can make the case that it's worth the budget to reconcile, and here's the consequence if you don't, and mm-hmm. if you can put it in trade-off language, then some of those decisions can be revisited. I just want to share with you, Fred, maybe I think I might have mentioned this before, but since failure mechanisms are, in my opinion, the key to design for reliability mm-hmm. success, what I did when I was managing GM's reliability group is during every staff meeting, I assigned one person a different failure mechanism to research and present information about in the staff meeting. Mm-hmm. So we'd have like a 15-minute at every staff meeting, a 15-minute lunch and learn, so to speak, where an assigned staff member would present impact fatigue, and the next one would be galvanic corrosion.
Oh,
and the next
man, one. I'd had so much fun with that. I'd go find the weirdest failure mechanisms.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're fascinating. I see these messages on LinkedIn every now and then about different ways metals fracture. And mm-hmm. there's a whole science to reading the fracture itself. And it tells you the story of how it broke. Was it an embrittlement, or was it a torsional break, or was it a clean break, or was it a material defect that, you could read so much in knowing how to do that. So that would be fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. No, I did something like that not with a staff meeting and stuff like that, but it was one of those, we did two things actually when I was at HP's. One is that when we would solve a particularly big problem for the corporation, ceramic, multi-layer ceramic capacitors were failing. And they seem to fail every 5 years. A new product design would put a ceramic capacitor too close to a break-off tab or too close to a screw such that the board would deflect. And the underlying problem was that people would forget that ceramic capacitors are just little pieces of glass. And they don't like a high temperature gradient. They don't like to be bent. They don't like to be pushed on. All these other things that would cause them to break. So we would do a webinar, essentially, talking about how fragile these things are. And here's the design guidelines to avoid those things. We got into one of them because you're more a mechanical guy, but we had these ceramic capacitors, they would just blow off the board. They would get too much current, and there would be some kind of short in there that would cause it to heat up very fast, and it would just, there's no capacitor left to look at because it just blows up, essentially. And so the failure mechanism in one particular case was so serious that we needed to understand why that was happening, exactly mm-hmm. the mechanism. And the conventional lore is that, a little piece of the silver or the nickel that's on the inner layers creeps through or flows through the ceramic inner layers. And I'm thinking that's a small filament, a very, very small, atom width line of metal. That'll just vaporize. And I said, well, how much, I went and talked to some chemists and it's like, how much energy is in that much material when it vaporizes, when it phase transitions? And it was so small, it could not explain the whole system exploding. You know, like this pastor. So we had it. So I finally got a hold of, and it was one of the advantages of being at HP corporate is I could call the technical directors at the suppliers and say, hi, I'm from HP corporate.
Yes.
I'd like to ask you a question.
And I'm here to help.
I'm here to help. Yeah. I want to ask you a question. And one guy said, you know, we don't write about it a lot. Here's the paper we did a few years ago on it. But if that little filament, that does happen. There's small imperfections in the silicon, or they get cracked slightly, and this metal, the base metal, will flow through those cracks. And you're right. It's not enough. It doesn't carry enough current to cause the device to fail. But what happens is a little bit goes in there and it heats up just enough to create this barium titanate, which is the ceramic inner layers of the material, will turn into a semiconductor so that the ceramic turns into a conductor and it can carry a lot of current. So if it, if that occurs and it provides enough current, it will create a lot of heat really fast. And that's why it explodes. And so we're like, oh, okay. Now, it didn't change the nature of what we did about it, right? We had to change designs and circuitry and make sure we didn't crack the capacitors. But it gave us a much deeper understanding of what exactly was going on. And it made sense. And we could then had a good story to tell and share. So I wish I was in your staff meeting. I'd bring that one in because I had the material science and the math and all of the chemical stuff that happened, the temperatures, all that stuff.
That's a great story. And with that depth of understanding, it really does open up solutions. In other words, you can start then solving within the framework of understanding the mechanism. Let me just comment, Fred, on something you mentioned earlier, which is you don't necessarily take everything down to the physics of failure and mechanisms. Here's the rule that I use, particularly in FMEAs, but I think it applies elsewhere as well, because when we have high risk, and by high risk, I'm talking about high severity or high frequency issues, then I always want to get to the root cause and underlying failure mechanism. So I'm not trying to get to root cause and underlying failure mechanism of everything. But where we have that high severity and high occurrence and other types of risk metrics, then I do want to get to the root cause and underlying failure mechanism.
That's right. Now, how about field failures? You're starting to see some failures in the field, and it's, you know, eventually it's going to have a Pareto type shape to it, and one thing is going to start counting more than others. Is that another way to prioritize it? Which ones you got to dive in deep on and solve? Or,
well, certainly there's two aspects to the field, or really three. There's the frequency that something happens. There's the how severe it is. In other words, if it's safety related, and if you have a safety related, even a very infrequent can be very high risk.
Right.
And then there's the cost element. So you have some different things to prioritize. But yes, you need an algorithm to understand an algorithm that is monitoring field information and understands those three elements so you can prioritize properly. And then based on that, yes, we want to do proper root cause analysis and underlying mechanisms of failure.
Well, the whole idea, and it might be a whole another podcast, is just focusing on, do you have all that material that you had all those failure mechanisms described? Maybe we could create a whole other show on that.
Yeah, I do. In fact, it's an appendix in my Effective FMEAs book. I've got an appendix on failure mechanisms because I want the FMEA practitioners to understand the different mechanisms of failure, what they are.
Oh, man. I don't think I've noticed that. I've gone through the book on occasion, you know, and I didn't diligently read it. I'm sorry, Carl, page for page, you know, but it is a good reference, you know, when I'm especially the language of how to describe stuff and explain it to other people and get me through getting the concepts across. That always is helpful.
I've got a whole section on failure mechanisms in chapter 6 and then an appendix listing them out.
Okay.
Another podcast would be good.
Yeah. You know, Well, I'm just thinking not just an episode. I think it's a whole nother show just on failure mechanisms, because I think that would, because I've got a handful of references I go to all the time.
A whole series.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do a whole season on failure mechanisms.
Yeah. There's dozens of them. And
dozens?
One,
you're kidding. Yeah. There's hundreds. Okay. Hundreds.
Well, if you have enough dozens, you get into hundreds.
There you go. There you go. But we should, you know, what, for our listeners, you know, let us know what's your favorite failure mechanism. That might be a great way to know if we have interest in it, if we get a bunch of interesting ones and ones that we could talk about. And just share, because sometimes I think the idea that you did, Carl, of having awareness of all the different ways things can fail is a start. And then it balancing that off the other things we talked about, whether it's cost or severity or whatever, is which ones you dive into and really understand. One of the advantages of our job in working in reliability is that the engineering world creates new materials and new applications and new ways for things to fail all the time, which is really cool. So we get to learn a lot. But let's leave it open to our listeners. You know, so go over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And it's a page devoted to just listening to you to let us know what, in this particular case, our question is, well, what are your favorite failure mechanisms, or which ones would you like to learn more about, or which ones should we share on a future show? That would be a great use of the show. I think I got the link right. ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. Yeah.
That's the right one.
Okay.
Okay.
Sound good, Carl. Good idea. I think I like that idea of the sharing the knowledge on a regular basis. And I'm sure you've. And now I'm going upstairs to my bookcase and I'm going to go take a look at that appendix.
Do a little afternoon reading.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
It's what we do. All right. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.